Hello, this is Robert Noya, Editor-in-Chief of Sky and Telescope magazine. I'm on the phone with Caltech astronomer Dr. John Johnson, who has led or been a member of teams that have discovered many dozens of planets around other stars. Dr. Johnson authored the cover story of our April 2011 issue about the stars that host planets. John, thanks for joining our S&T podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, great. Now, I remember meeting you at Lick Observatory about 10 years ago when I was writing an article about Deborah Fisher and her search for extrasolar planets. At the time, you were a graduate student working with Jeff Marcy at the University of California at Berkeley. At that time, I mean, and also today, there are many different fields of astronomy that young researchers such as yourself can pursue. Why did you decide to go into the field of searching for extrasolar planets?
Extrasolar planets just really excited my imagination in a way that other astrophysical objects did not. There's just something about how you can imagine traveling to a planet and being in a spacecraft and entering a new solar system, visiting each one of the planets in that solar system in turn, orbiting one of them. There's a lot of familiarity with planets. They imagine looking at something like our own Jupiter, but around another star, or maybe a double star. And so something about planets just offers something very tangible, yet very a way of exciting your imagination, like the way science fiction moves.
And from what I've seen, you've really made your mark in the field in searching for planets around massive stars, because 10 years ago, very little was known about that. How many stars are there around stars that, let's say, are two or times more massive than the Sun? You call these in the article retired A stars. What motivated you to pursue this line of research?
In 2004, there was a paper that came out by Greg Laughlin, who's an astronomer at UC Santa Cruz, and he made the prediction that M dwarfs, the stars much smaller than the Sun, would not have very many planets. And so I remember reading that article and extrapolating it to the other direction. M dwarfs have fewer planets than Sun-like stars, and it's because of their mass. Then perhaps if we go to stars that are much more massive than the Sun, we'll find tons of planets.
And that's, in fact, exactly what you have found, correct?
That is right, yeah. Once we went above 1 to 1.3 solar masses, which hadn't really been searched before, we found virtually swarms of planets. And so our sample of stars has turned into a very rich hunting ground for massive Jupiter-like planets.
And as you describe in your article, and as you were just mentioning, stars with high mass and also stars with high levels of heavy elements are more likely to have planets. Why is that? Do you think it's just a matter of these stars started off with protoplanetary disks with lots of planet-forming material around them? Or do you think there could be something even deeper going on?
I think that's probably the most likely reason according to a number of lines of evidence. When you increase a star's metallicity, then you increase the metal content or dust content of the disk that it had long ago. And then that provides more of the raw material, the building blocks for making giant planets. And similarly, when you see a more massive star today, it's fairly safe to assume that in the past it had a much more massive disk. And that disk had more solid building blocks and more hydrogen, more gas, to go into the construction of gas giant planets. There's another possibility, and that is just simply that the stars with higher iron content is just a result of them having swallowed more of their planets in the past. We know that once planets form, they have a tendency to spiral inward towards their stars. And so if stars are particularly efficient at forming planets and then having those planets fall inward out onto the star, then what we might be seeing is just an artificial skin-deep enhancement of their metal content. So that's the alternative theory. But as I said, based on our research, seeing the correlation with stellar mass as well has allowed us to infer that it's related to the properties of the protoplanetary disk and the raw materials for building planets.
If stars with low concentrations of heavy elements have a more difficult time making planets, we have to tie that into the fact that we know that the early universe lacked heavy elements because there hadn't been multiple rounds of star formation and supernovae to seed the universe with heavier elements. When do you think planets first started to appear in the universe in our Milky Way galaxy? Like, how long after the Big Bang do you think planets started to form?
Well, just based on our own solar system and knowing its age very, very well, we know that it had to have been no later than about 10 billion years after the galaxy was born. And it had to have been after the first generation of stars. As you mentioned, those stars had very little in the way of heavy elements, but they also had completely different structures. There were big, massive stars, hundreds of times the mass of the Sun. And once those stars extinguished and went into supernovae, they seeded the galaxy with heavier elements. And it's possibly with the second generation of stars, but most likely with the third generation of stars. And so I'd imagine that it was probably 3 to 5 billion years after the formation of the galaxy that the first recognizable planetary systems were formed. But that's just based on fairly limited knowledge of what we know population of planets around other stars has been found today. But those are just the close-in planets. We don't know very much about the planets that form very far from their stars. And the planets that are, for instance, the ones that are being imaged around stars like Fomalhaut or HR 8799, which are as many tens or even hundreds of astronomical units away from their central stars, those could have formed through a different mechanism. And that mechanism might have been in operation much earlier than we would infer from a current sample of planets.
And that sort of raises the question that, and we recently ran a news article in S&T, and this story got a lot of media attention, is a team found a star that formed in another galaxy, in a small dwarf galaxy that's being cannibalized by the Milky Way. And this is a Jupiter-class planet, but it's orbiting a star with a very low concentration of heavy elements. So it kind of is bucking this trend that you and your colleagues have identified. Do you think that the existence of a planet around a very metal-poor star indicates that there could be multiple channels for planet formation, and maybe there was an early round of planet formation in the universe?
I think that's entirely possible. There's that example that you just named, and there are several other examples of large Jupiter or even super Jupiter mass planets or systems of planets that form around stars with metallicities of only a few percent that of the Sun. And each of those, say, half dozen or so planetary systems challenges the basic paradigm that I've outlined in my article. So I think that what that just says is that nature is far more clever than our simplified models. I don't think that that's much of a stretch to say. I think there's probably at least two, probably several more methods of forming a planet. And as we search around various different types of stars, we're going to get a sense for all those different mechanisms.
Yeah, it sounds like there are these general trends about mass and metallicity that you and your colleagues have identified, but you can always find exceptions to these more general rules.
Yes, that's right.
And your article talks about the fact, and I found this particularly interesting, that many of the close-in hot Jupiters, these transiting planets that have been identified, have orbits that are misaligned with the spin axes of their parent stars. You look at our solar system, all the planets are going around the Sun in the same direction, more or less in the Sun's rotational plane. How do you think these planets ended up in such screwy orbits?
Well, it has something to do with that process of planets wandering inwards towards their star, and we refer to this as migration. It's a bit of a misnomer because they never turn around and go back, although they very rarely do. It's a one-way journey. But once planets form out near where our own Jupiter is, about 5 to maybe 10 astronomical units, they quite often we find that they wander in. And that the process of migration is currently an outstanding question in our understanding of planetary systems. And one possible mechanism is that they follow the disk material as it drains onto the star. And so if the planet is going along for a ride with the material in the disk, then you would expect for them to remain aligned with the central star, since the disk is presumably also aligned with the star. And so that was the general mechanism that people assumed was in operation around those until we found these misaligns. And even some systems that have planets to go around their stars backwards, retrograde planets. Mm. And so this requires some other more impulsive mechanism. The planets form within the disk. They probably form fairly well aligned with their central star. But then perhaps there are other planets that also form. They begin gravitationally interacting, kicking each other around, exciting both eccentricities, which we do see very high eccentricities, and also exciting and kicking them into a very misaligned configuration. And so right now our understanding of planet migration is itself evolving. It's evolving away from this idea that planets move with the disk material to there being a need for gravity. gravitational perturbations to those planets' orbits and kicking them around.
And it seems like that's been a real take-home message of these hundreds of planets that have been identified, that look at these other systems, and we're not seeing a lot of systems that look very much like the solar system. A lot of these other systems are very different in terms of the masses of the planets, the orbits, and the multiple planet systems. We have some of these systems with fairly packed systems with super-Earths and more massive planets. That it seems that we've learned that it's not just a matter of planets forming around stars and then happily and merrily orbiting where they form, but that things are chaotic and dynamic. We get planets moving around, interacting with each other, planets being ejected out of their systems, et cetera, et cetera. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I'd also add to that that it's important to realize that what we know about planets today is for this population of planets that orbits well within about 5 astronomical units. These are giant planets generally, although we're finding much, much less massive planets now, but generally it's massive planets that orbit much closer than our massive planets. And so I like to think of these as the bonus planets. These were not expected to be where they are. We didn't expect to find hot Jupiters. We didn't even expect to find Jupiter mass planets at 1 astronomical unit. It was expected that we would have to wait for about 10, maybe even 20 years to see an orbit complete. Yeah, here we are, we get to see planets complete their entire year in a few Earth days. And so these are wonderful discoveries, but they're providing us with a fairly limited picture of what all planetary systems might look like. And so it's just now today that we're reaching the point where we can see the completion of very long period orbits around other stars so that we can get an idea of truly solar system-like planetary systems. So before we draw the conclusion that our own solar system, with its Jupiter very far away from the star, before we conclude that that is rare, we need to wait until we can see the complete picture, which is motivation for continuing our searches for planets around other stars.
The thing that's just boggled my mind is how the field of exoplanets has just exploded in the past decade. Our current count is now over 500 known exoplanets. We've seen planets that are almost down to Earth in mass and size. We're starting to detect atmospheric gases in some of these planets. And with NASA's Kepler mission, we're going to learn a lot more about the population of small terrestrial-sized planets that must exist in our galaxy. Where do you see this field being 10 years from now?
I think there are two frontiers in our study of exoplanets. The first is what I just mentioned, is looking for long period giant planets. And we're doing that right now by just waiting longer, like using the Doppler wobble technique. And we're also doing that through high contrast imaging, where we're actually looking to take pictures of planets in very, very wide orbits. And so those two areas of study are advancing quickly, and we're going to soon start studying planets that orbit at 10 or even 100 astronomical units from their star. The other frontier is, as you alluded to, is pushing down in mass, looking for planets that are closer in mass to the Earth. The Earth is 300 times smaller than one Jupiter mass planet, so we need a correspondingly large increase in our precision, and we're making strides year after year in improving our precision and our ability to detect small planets. And we're also going to be aided in with the Kepler mission, which is looking for planets via the transit method. And so it's waiting for planets to pass between us and the star to eclipse the star. And it's sensitive enough to find an Earth-sized planet around a star. Even though these stars will be far away, these will probably be our first opportunity to detect a truly rocky Earth-like planet. And so I think those are the two major frontiers. Besides areas related to the planet itself, we're also making big advances in studying planet formation through the statistics of planets. Once we build up a large enough sample, that sample begins to start telling clear pictures, albeit in a statistical sense. Each individual system may look like an oddball, but all together they form a very clear picture of the way that planets form and the way that their orbits evolve.
And I guess ultimately this all gets down to the question of, are we alone? How much other life is out there in the universe? We still don't really know what a typical planetary system is like, but we will maybe in the next 10, 20 years really start to get a handle on some of these even deeper questions.
Absolutely. I believe that is a very good assessment of where we're going to be heading in the next couple of decades. We're going to address, first of all, the question, how common are planetary systems like our own? And then once we've identified several of these, we'll find the most likely places in the universe to find life. And so these are large, big questions that are going to affect our view of our place within the galaxy.
Great. Well, I think that answers the questions I have for now. I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us for the S&T podcast.
You're most welcome.